Hello, my name is Noah Rude. I live at 926 Claflin Road, and I am representing the Tenant Union Renters Together, MHK. On March 17th of this year, tenants from Royal Towers were ordered by Ryan Courtright of Risk Reduction to vacate the building by May 1st, since the building was being condemned. News outlets reported on this issue and made it seem that the city was going to help tenants move and find new housing. Our tenant union, Renters Together, MHK, took it upon ourselves to go directly to tenants and speak with them about their situation and see how we could help. Feeling upset and forgotten, at least 45 of the tenants formed a group on their own to try to get the attention of the public and the city. After talking with a family, students, a veteran, a small business owner, and other tenants that have been there for many years, we were baffled at what they had to say. Tenants have said this experience has been an absolute nightmare. The short notice in the middle of the school semester and the renting year has forced tenants into a desperate situation. Many feared that they may become homeless. As renters, we are used to slumlords letting their properties deteriorate beyond repair, harassing us and price gouging us. However, what shocked us was the city's continual disregard for the safety and well-being of its residents. Residents are made criminal by the issue of a $500 fine and or jail up to 6 months if they couldn't find housing and were unable to move out on time. Residents claim that no aid was given to them. If you were to go to the City of Manhattan's official website and you go to the Royal Towers updates under the section Social Service Assistance, you will find that it is completely blank, which seems like some kind of cruel out-of-season April Fool's joke. Residents living on the top floors were ordered to leave thousands of dollars worth of furniture and equipment. Desperate tenants were forced to leave the city, the state, and seek homeless shelters. Some were fortunate enough to have an inheritance that they could tap into or a friend's couch that they could sleep on. This forced move caused many tenants into financial devastation, with one tenant reporting up to $2,000 in moving expenses alone. We don't know what happened to the other tenants that didn't speak to us, if they were able to find housing or not, and how much this forced move cost them. While tenants were in distress, frantically trying to find housing in good condition that was affordable and had a lease start date within a few months of their move-out date, the mayor of Manhattan, Mark Hadesal, took it upon himself to go on K-Man podcast and place the blame on tenants. During a time when affordable housing is scarce and housing in poor quality is in abundance due to the city's lack of housing regulations, he stated, and I quote, "The issue is that sometimes people will put up with stuff when they shouldn't because they need to have a place that's less expensive to stay in," end quote. K-Man phrased Mark's words on their website as, quote, "Residents should never rent a place before seeing it first, and to communicate issues to their landlords, noting tenants should not put up with negligence no matter how affordable a rental is," end quote. Last I checked, it was the landlord and the city who holds the power to ensure housing is safe and affordable, not tenants. It's incredibly easy to sit up in your ivory tower, finger wag and victim blame renters who have little money and no power while taking no accountability for the actions you could have taken and can still take. The mayor also said that the system the city has in place worked, as if financially devastating tenants and threatening them with either jail and a fine or homelessness was any indication of success. If you want to know the status of tenants at Royal Towers, you should make the effort to go and talk to them instead of making the assumption that everything worked out and that everyone lived happily ever after. We demand that the City of Manhattan takes the safety and well-being of its residents seriously, as well as the safety of the homes that make up our city. Many tenants have expressed the need for financial reparations either from the city or the landlord, as the tenants had to abruptly spend thousands of dollars just to move into new housing. We hope in the future that we can have better leadership that takes accountability and holds slumlords accountable during crises like this one. That is all.
All right, the next one on the agenda is Justin Yeary.
All right, Good evening, City Commissioners. My name is Justin Yeary. I live on 701 North 9th Street, right across the street from Bluemont Elementary. And I'm here on behalf of the same organization as my friend Noah as an organizer for Renters Together, the tenant union. And I'm here to talk about the same topic, the Royal Towers. So, you know, people here in the audience or the commissioners might not have known, because I don't think many people went there, but this Sunday, Royal Towers at the address of 1700 North Manhattan Avenue, right across the street from Kansas State University, was condemned by the city for its uninhabitable and dangerous living conditions. And I know that this county, this commission, has spent a lot of money recently. There's that in the budget, as well as I understand $25,000 for gift cards going to Aggieville businesses. And this council also gets a lot of money from those same businesses. Commissioner Mata, I know that you were given, I believe in 2021, a campaign donation from Mr. Michael Hill of Hill Investment and Rentals, as well as Mr. Ryan Bramhall. So there was about $500 from each of them, if I'm not mistaken. And for the record, let me just say that Mr. Bramhall is the owner of Tubby's in Aggieville, which is one of the businesses that is getting the basically the subsidies from the City of Manhattan Commission in front of you here. And so they will be receiving some of those generous welfare checks for the poor, starving corporations. And Mayor Butler, you too were the recipient of $500 from the same Mr. Hill, Mr. Bramhall. And not only that, you also took another $500 donation from the CFO of a large asphalt manufacturing concern located in town. So I'm very glad that the mayor and the city and all of our esteemed commissioners have so much money to spend. You know, it's good to have that. But I want to know, why aren't you spending money to remedy the crisis created by the criminal slumlord by the name of Richard Balderramos, who, by the way, lives in the state of South Carolina, CEO of TD Investment LLC, which is slumlord front corporation. So I'm guessing, like, maybe y'all haven't been there yet, but I have, right? So you all have not personally looked and seen the crumbling cement, the condensation forming on people's windows, walls covered in black mold. People described like a black sludge coming up through the pipes, and they dealt with that, right? I'm guessing that y'all haven't seen that because I don't see it anywhere on the agenda, right? But the city inspector certainly has seen it, which is why the property's condemned, right? So as my friend Noah here said, the tenants now have nowhere to go. They have no more money to spend. They're being forced out. And they are forced out by the city and the government that is supposed to work for them. So what are the penalties for those tenants who, you know, for one reason or another, stay past the condemnation date? As I understand it, according to the notices, it is subject to a 6-month term in jail, a $500 fine, or both. And that's per day that they're found in violation. So instead of relief, the city government is sending the police, the RCPD, after these people who have done nothing wrong. Why isn't the slumlord Balderramos being held accountable for creating the situation? He's ultimately the one who's responsible. Where are the fines, the arrests, the jail times, the indictment for Richard Balderramos, the slumlord, whose negligence and gross disregard for human life threatens to throw all of these working class people as well as students out on the street? Or even worse, it could land him up in jail for doing really nothing wrong. So until this moment, you know, perhaps you could say, oh, I didn't know how bad the situation was. I didn't see it myself. But I'm here to show you and tell you that, right? The city is threatening to prosecute innocent working people and students for the quote-unquote crime of being the tenants of the real criminal, the slumlord Richard Balderramos of South Carolina. So in conclusion, we, the members of Renters Together, urge you, the city commissioners, in the strongest possible terms, to adopt a resolution to bring relief to the tenants at Royal Towers, and at the same time, to work with the DA to prosecute the criminal slumlord Richard Balderramos for his gross neglect and disregard for human life. That's all I got. Thank you.
Is there any other public comment on items that are not on the agenda for this evening? Come on up, state your name, address.
Good evening, City Commission of Manhattan. My name is Seamus Neal. My address is 7820 Cedar Creek Road, Manhattan. Last September, I had the pleasure of meeting Ron Fear, and You know, we went over, I had an appeal that I wrote addressed to the city commission in regards to the denial of massage therapy license. So thank you for providing me the opportunity to speak before you. I understand that according to the city's code section 1961, which defines the possession of marijuana as a crime of moral turpitude, and the reason for the denial of my application. However, I'm asking you to allow me the grace to offer you a worthy appeal with plausible reasons why these two convictions do not define my moral standing or competence as a massage therapist serving the community in the city of Manhattan. To do this, I would like to allow those in the community in which I have been serving to offer valid reasons for why I'm a truly a professional massage therapist with excellent moral standing. And I would like the opportunity to continue to grow and benefit the community if I'm allowed the grace to do so. The following sources from the community can offer these valid reasons. In 2021, my massage practice received the award for number one massage from the Mercury. The reviews for my service on Google and massagebook.com are excellent. And I have a returning client base that consisting of diverse and reputable community members. Finally, I will provide a statement of personal growth since my convictions. In 2021, I worked at Trisha's Studio 24, and we received the Reader's Choice Award for Mercury Number One Massage. At that time, I was running my business inside the Studio 24, as I am currently, which resides outside the city of Manhattan. I rent my room and, I operate my business from within. And I was the only massage therapist serving inside the salon at the time and still am. It was my business, ST Neal Massage and Body Work, and received this recognition. Receiving the award for number one massage is a clear expression from the community that I am a trusted and professional massage therapist with excellent moral standing. On Google reviews, my business has excellent reviews. A comment review from a client of mine from a year ago reads, "Seamus is amazing, a real professional with genuine healing touch. I seldom write reviews, but had to do it because he was really that good. He alleviated my chronic low back pain, tended to my sore leg muscles from running, and I think I am on the way to being healed from an old hip injury that has bugged me for months. The place is very pleasant, relaxing music, very professional approach and environment. Can't recommend him enough." Another comment from another client said, "Seamus is amazing. I'm slowly recovering from a slipped disc. I walked in, walking, still bent over in pain. Seamus focused on the area where it was hurting. And let me tell you, if you're looking for a massage therapist, give Seamus a try. You'll keep coming back. I left walking with almost no pain, practically straight up. I will definitely be a repeat customer. Thank you, Seamus. I almost feel human again." These reviews from others left on Google for my business show that I'm a professional massage therapist, changing the lives and making a difference in the community. Seamus is very attentive. He makes sure he's aware of your concerns and even asks for ways to improve personally. Somehow, always makes each experience better than the last. Awesome. Very positive experience, allows the time to listen, and will continue to utilize massage services available, and highly recommend ST Neal Massage and Body Work. So these reviews can be found on Google and Massage Book, and the fact that ST Neal and Massage and Body Work has excellent reviews with positive feedback from people in the community, it's a sign that my service is reputable and trusted, and I'm viewed as an excellent massage therapist with moral standing. I have a diverse and reputable client base, ranging from professionals of paramedics, first responders, both male and female, teachers, those with chronic injuries, those that suffer from anxiety and depression, ADHD. This client base I humbly serve without discrimination, and the fact that they have chosen me to serve them, whether it's from reading a good review online, word of mouth, or
Thank you. I'll take that for consideration. All right. Is there anybody else for public comment? We've got two. step forward, state your name, sign in, please.
Oh, my name is Alfonso Bustos. I actually do not reside anywhere currently because I am actually from Royal Towers. I came here just as proof that, yes, people did live there. I was personally affected by this sudden shutdown of my humble abode. And then it was paraded and made fun of. And no help was given to any of my neighbors or myself. I am outraged. And I am terrified. The landlord did not reach out to me any time during the move-out process. Did you guys know that? They still charged me rent for May 3rd. Thank you.
Seamus and Alfonso, could you sign in at the podium, please?
Good evening. My name is Melissa Morrill. I live at 1772 Castle. I'm the project director for the Manhattan Area Risk Prevention Coalition. I've been with, instead of saying that whole long name again, I'm just going to say MARPC, so you guys know what it means. Since 2013, I'm a lifetime resident of Manhattan as well as my husband, and we have raised two children in the community. Our coalition is made up of representatives of the USD 383, Manhattan Ogden Schools, Fort Riley, K-State, Boys and Girls Club, UFM, Pawnee Mental Health Services, the Health Department, and RCPD, among many others in the community. MARPC's mission is to reduce risky behaviors through prevention, education, community collaboration, and other drug-free community or similar evidence-based strategies. We currently have a multi-year federal drug-free communities grant that focuses on ages 12 to 20 and encourages us to work closely within our schools and with their leadership to reduce substance abuse. Our collaboration with the school district has been critical for our work here in Manhattan. Over the years, we have worked with the school's prevention programs to hold our events such as Sticker Shock, media campaigns, data analysis and evaluation efforts, and our Tall Cop presentations that we have made available for our school district, secondary faculty, as well as during a parent night presentation. We have worked together to educate parents on the dangers that drugs pose to their children, and these efforts have been critical to increase wellness while saving lives. In addition to collaborating with the schools on education, our coalition relies on the school's commitment to participation in the Kansas Communities That Care surveys. Our coalition relies on this youth data to complete our community needs assessment each year. This is a critical part of the substance abuse prevention work we do. The school is able to participate in this survey as a direct result with their special alcohol grant funds that are given out. Through the special alcohol grants money that the city commission has gotten rid of that, city alcohol and the special advisory, you have dissolved both of those and you have just made one committee from that. I'm also a parent of two adult children who went to Panda Preschool, Marlette Elementary. When my children attended Marlette, they graduated from sixth grade to seventh grade with the Life Skills Program, which is an evidence-based program that USD 383 uses as part of their city alcohol grant. Both of my children graduated from Manhattan High as well. But in 2018, My daughter was diagnosed with a massive brain tumor. I did not feel safe with her attending school with her medical condition, but please know that I've always been involved with their schools, and I was involved any way that I, you know, and if a parent wants to know what's going on in their kids' school lives, get involved. And that's what I did. I got involved with my kids' classrooms. I got involved with their schools. And so I also worked at Manhattan High under Dr. Hardy. And I saw everything that happened in the day, in the life of a high school. And so that was very eye-opening for me. And I have directly witnessed the need for continued education in prevention at our high school. And with our ninth graders going up to our high school next year, that education needs to be continued. So I'm concerned that the Special Alcohol Funds Committee has been dissolved, and it's my wish that the school district and other funded agencies continue to get that grant funding. Our coalition and federal grant rely on our partnership with the schools, and without these funds, our communities, families, and our children will not receive the support that they need and deserve. This is a time that youth are struggling with stressors, including those resulting from COVID. We need that special alcohol funds to continue to focus on education. With the rise of deadly drugs like fentanyl, that is not the time to dismantle a critical school program. Okay. Goodness, that's loud.
All right, good timing. Is there anybody else who would like to comment on an item that's not on the agenda for this evening?
Good evening. My name is Tyrone Townsend. Address is 8857 Elderberry Run, Manhattan, Kansas. Thank you for having me here today. I'm here to talk about, or advocate at least, for that city alcohol grant that was just discussed. I'm a former police officer with the Raleigh County Police Department, where I served for nearly 9 years. While still in the police department, I went back to school to earn my master's in clinical mental health counseling. I now own a private practice where I treat clients with mental health and substance use disorders. While at the police department, I spent 2 years from 2017 to 2019 as a school resource officer at Manhattan High School. My role was that of protection, education, and also a mentor to those students. That mentorship portion is important. I was able to build trust and rapport with many students who opened up about their home lives and how substance use affected them. Students would seek options for substance use or alcohol treatment for their family members initially, at least that's how it started. Once more, trust was gained. Students would seek help for themselves. One point of contention for me was always resources. I just didn't have enough. What was I legally and functionally able to do as a police officer? Basically, what was within my scope, as we say as counselors? I could provide education to them from the law enforcement perspective as well as from the substance use disorder lens, but I was not yet a licensed counselor or addictions counselor. I needed more. I needed more help. I needed a resource such as Kari, whose students could talk to and be heard and direct the plan of action. And she's an addictions counselor. She's here today, Kari. Yes. Manhattan High School is a beautiful school with so many wonderful students, teachers, and staff. What it is not is without addiction and substance use. Because substance use affects multiple layers of functioning, it takes a multidimensional approach to treatment. The medical model considers substance use disorders to be a lifelong, chronic, and relapsing condition. Therefore, a person with a substance use disorder is never considered cured, only in remission, recovering, or non-practicing. Which is why a treatment program within the school is so vital. It's something I did not have growing up in Kansas City, Kansas, USD 500. So the statistics are out there for you to research. I won't bore you here today with them. That's not my role. What I do want to share is what I see when students do not have access to resource for substance use. Again, remember, I was a school cop, so I saw it firsthand. When that happens, a few things happen. One, feelings of being a burden or exhausted to the, quote, others in their lives, which include family members and friends, become the norm. Exhausted from doing so, for doing as much self and inner work as they can, or what we call burnout, just fatigue. You can only do so much. And remember, we're talking about kids. Ultimately, what happens is they give up, and that presents at many different levels. It can be withdrawal, again, relapse. It can be acting out, poor grades. It can even lead to, in some instances, self-harm and suicide. What that looks like to each individual is different, but what I can tell you from experience in those kids is that they feel abandoned, rejected, and not valued. I realize that that is not the implicit intention of anyone making these decisions today and in the future. And I won't play politics. I have no idea. But while that may be true, and I tell my clients this all the time, remember, it's not always the intention, but the impact of our experiences and decisions that in the end matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else for items not on the agenda? All right, we'll go ahead and close the public comment portion.